2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome to this week's edition of UTEL Weekly Forum. I'm your host, Rebecca Cressman, and I am so grateful to Dr. Travis Mickelson. He is Intermountain Healthcare's Director of Medical Health Integration, and today we're going to be talking about something that is most likely affecting every family, and that is anxiety and how we can help our families navigate anxiety, how parents can help their children navigate all of the associated changes that have come with COVID-19. That's a big, big statement right there, Dr. Mickelson. But this is something that you've been concerned about, right? Is the change in routines in children's lives?
That's right. You know, it's something that we are all experiencing. There's not one person here that is not feeling this, the stress that related to this coronavirus epidemic. And to add on to that, the earthquake we had recently, it's just there's so much that is causing us concern.
And that's a wonderful thing to also add in, not just the bigger earthquake, 5.7, but we're also looking at the aftershocks. So for parents, and especially those along the Wasatch Front who've lived here for many years, it's not common for them to feel these quakes. And for their children, it's even more strange. So let's take it back from we're in a time of uncertainty. What as parents, what can we do to help our mental frame put this in perspective so that we can now start to project that or help our children navigate these changes?
Excellent question, Rebecca. My first thought is that as a parent, it's so important that we are taking care of ourselves and managing our own anxiety and reminding ourselves that as parents and as adults, we have been through difficult, challenging times, and we need to remind ourselves of what are those healthy coping strategies that we have used and making sure that we are using them right now, because our children and our friends and family need us more than ever before. And if our children are having their own concerns and fears and worries and anxieties, if they can look up to us and see that we're staying calm and supportive, and if they feel safe and secure with us, that's exactly what they want to be experiencing right now.
Are there a couple of things you can tell us as parents what we can do to ground ourselves? And then let's focus on the needs of our children.
Yes. Well, again, I know that we all as adults have our own healthy coping strategies, but some of the very common ones that we're hearing a lot about is the importance of maintaining a routine and maintaining structure, the value of making sure as much as possible that we are eating well, sleeping well, exercising, making sure that we are actively and purposefully finding moments and opportunities to be grateful and to praise others for what they're doing, and reminding us that when we are in a time of challenge, one of the things that feels so good to us is to feel like we're being helpful, feel like we're doing something to help support the safety and security of our family. So when you think about children, one of the things that children really thrive in, and this is a big challenge for us as parents, since we're now becoming helping them with their school because they're all home and doing online schooling. Kids thrive in structure. And so if we can help them to maintain that structure. The other thing that we love about our school teachers is our teachers are so good at noticing and capturing their students and our children doing good things, being helpful, being friendly.
And that's something we can kind of model that as well, remember. So be even more verbal about what they're doing that you notice that is on target and helpful. Express it to them because they're used to that coming from that educational environment.
Yes, now more than ever before. One of the things that we want to be thinking about is we need to be catching our children and praising them and acknowledging what they're doing and acknowledging their strengths five times as often as we notice when they're not doing things the right way or providing criticism.
I'm really glad you brought that up. And for those who've just joined us, this is Dr. Travis Mickelson. He's Intermountain Healthcare's Director of Medical Health Integration. We've been hearing in the past about the importance of positive communication between parents and children and husbands and wives and that 5-to-1 ratio. But this is a new context, the idea that with the tension and the stress that is in our home environments, to keep that as one of our goals, to realize that that helps bring the stress down. That helps foment greater mental health in the family. That 5 positive for 1 negative, right?
Yes.
It's you know, and I was reading an article, Dr. Mickelson, and you were quoted in it. And it was talking about the challenges for our older children. And let's talk a bit about that. I know that we have young adults beyond the teenage years that are losing the ability to graduate in an honored ceremony that they've worked for years. You have college students working online with their classes. You have young adults unsure of the future. And then you have those teenagers that, let's talk a bit about why being home all the time might be a little bit more difficult for teenagers.
Right. I love talking about adolescents. It's my absolute favorite group of humans on this planet. One of the great things about adolescents is that they are wired to practice their independence. And so one of the common mistakes we make as parents is when our adolescents are brave enough to talk with us about how they're feeling, we oftentimes quickly move into fix-it mode. And one of the things we really need to pay attention to as parents is being able to really validate how they're feeling and what they're thinking about, and then let them be the ones who come up with their solutions, because this is a great opportunity for us to role model for our adolescents that not only do we feel and care about what they're experiencing right now, but we trust that they're going to be able to, with their intellect and their skills and abilities, that they're going to be able to come up with some creative solutions to solve this. And we see that all over the place, adolescents coming up with very creative ways of making the most out of a very difficult situation.
So if they are coming to you and they're expressing their frustration over staying home and away from friends and their activities, then following your example, then we would then project or ask them, what do you think would be the solution right now within the guidelines we have?
Yes.
Okay. And one of the notes that I read was that for teenagers, especially older children, they're wired for independence. So, you know, it is especially challenging for them to not be out of the house right now.
I have a 16-year-old who, yeah, I know I'm experiencing that right now, and she's really struggling with all this family time. We love it as parents. We love that we're able to spend more time with our teenagers, but we also know that that's not what they would prefer doing. And so, again, just really being able to let them know that we understand where they're coming from and we're always able and willing to listen to them, but making sure that we try not to solve their problems, because from their perspective, that could directly challenge the thought that they have the independence and ability to do that themselves.
And so we want to communicate that we have trust and confidence in their ability to make healthy decisions for themselves. Let's talk about the need for them to talk openly with us right now. I know that a lot of researchers and experts like you know that we can foster a closer relationship with our teens when we begin early, making it safe for them to come and talk to us about their feelings when they're toddlers and all the way up. It becomes easier as we build those bridges. But right now, at this point, when we're at home and we're trying to maybe build that bridge that has been broken, what are some things that we can do right now to encourage them? And why is it so important for them to be able to feel safe to express their feelings to us right now?
Now, that's such a good question, Rebecca. I think what I would want our teenagers to hear or feel us saying as parents is just make sure that they know how important it is for us to have that relationship with them, and then ask them if they have any ideas or suggestions for how we might be able to work on that. And again, give them as much autonomy as possible in helping to guide us on how they would like that to work, rather than us telling them how we're going to make this happen. I think giving them as much autonomy as possible, because again, that's one of the things that I think our teenagers, our adolescents are really feeling is being missed right now, is not having the choice to be out of the home, away from our family, and with their friends.
It reminded me, just you describing that way, of almost drawing a large circle on a paper and saying, these are the guidelines we have with stay home and stay safe. It's something that the governor, it's going all the way down, right, across the street. But within that big circle, what are the smaller circles that, you know, the freedom that that young adolescent has to make decisions within that? I don't know if I've described that correctly.
I think that's a great way to describe that.
You know, I appreciate that. You mentioned the importance of routines and structure. And I want to go back, maybe since you were talking about adolescents and teenagers, let's scoot down just a little bit to the younger ages. Tell us the importance of having these same routines day to day, that structure every day. How does that help children?
Well, you know, again, children are, they really seem to do well when they can anticipate what's happening, when they can prepare for and know that when they walk into class that this is how their teacher is going to welcome them, and when they sit down, this is how their teacher is going to remind them if they're being disruptive or having a hard time paying attention, and they're going to expect that that communication is going to be done in a very safe and loving way. And so, you know, I think if we can just remember as parents that although kids do thrive in structure, when it comes to our role as parents, when we sometimes struggle as parents is when we notice that our child is behaving in a way that we don't like. And so the way we need to be thinking about changing that child's behavior in a more positive way is, again, praising them and acknowledging them when they do behave the right way far more often than you acknowledge and criticize them for not doing it the way that they should. And so with structure comes consistency in how we reinforce the behaviors we want to see more of. And the best way to reduce the behaviors we don't want to see or want to see less of is more actively ignoring them. Because for parents and for adults, criticism can be a way that to prevent us from doing something. But for a child, getting engaged in an argument can almost be more reinforcing than not having any attention placed to that behavior. So I would say actively ignore the problem behaviors as much as possible in a way that continues to keep the environment safe, and actively praise, really seek out and find opportunities to catch them behaving in the way that they want to, and really reinforcing that. And I'm not saying reinforcing that with giving them candy or toys or video games, but things like just good one-on-one time with their parent, giving them that really good attention that they really thrive on.
It's interesting because it's a whole new way. At first, I was thinking structure and routine. In other words, make sure as parents to do our best to have them go to bed at the same time each night, to have them wake up about the same time, to have expected things occur at certain times, meals and homework time. But you've given a really beautiful way for us to step back and realize structure isn't about rigid compliance and obedience of our children. You know, to what we might line out. It's about being consistent as parents to notify or notice the positive things, being consistent to ignore the negative when we can, to be consistent in providing them that emotional validation and that relationship. It's a different way of looking at structure.
That's right. And if I could add, you know, one of the challenges that we're all facing right now is we're all experiencing a world that is filled with much uncertainty, and we have a lot of questions and concerns of what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month. And so when we're filled with that uncertainty, oftentimes we start to see the world as generally uncertain. And so one of the things that structure can provide for children is because our children are very aware of what's going on right now, and there are a lot of things that are out of their control in terms of how to answer these questions of what's going to happen. But what the structure can provide them is, even though there is some uncertainty in our world, there's a lot of consistency and structure within our families.
That's very powerful. And I just had a conversation prior to my interview with you with one of my college age children. And he was talking about, again, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. It's not just the children that are wondering, am I going to go back to school May 1st, right? Am I going to see my babysitter again? Am I going to be able to play with my friends or my cousins? But this is going, it knows no boundaries, this fear and anxiety about the unknown. It's no age boundary. We're all experiencing it at the same time together.
That's right. And you presented a good example with your college-age child who is dealing with a lot with a loss. And when we deal with loss, we are wired to grieve, and that grieving process is going to be different for all of us. It's, for some of us, it might make us feel sad. Others worried and frustrated or angry, and we need to make sure that as parents, as people, that we allow ourselves to grieve these losses that we're all experiencing. The last thing we want any of us to feel is that how I'm feeling inside and the thoughts I'm having aren't valid or don't make sense.
And so guide me through that, because we don't have your expertise. And for those who've just joined us, we have about 5 minutes more with Dr. Travis Mickelson. He's with Intermountain Healthcare. He's the director of mental health integration. I hope I got that title correct this time. But how do we honor those feelings of grief? What's the safest way for us to do that, regardless of if we're talking to a spouse, talking to a loved one, talking to a child? Because indeed, everybody has lost something. They've lost certainty, they've lost access to friends, right? They've lost freedom, they've lost life as they thought. We will, for me, in my perspective, I can say, oh, with time, I can see us rebuilding. But we're right in the middle of this. So what's the best way to respond when people express those fears?
Well, I would say first, we all need to appreciate that we are going to experience this in our own way. And we need to make sure that we create environments, whether it's an environment within ourselves or within our homes, or for me, within between my colleagues in the clinic or at the hospital, that we provide a safe space where we can communicate that with each other. Because we need to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves, and we also need to make sure that we're taking care of our family and our friends and our colleagues, because if we are able to take care of ourselves and our families, then we are going to be most effective at helping others. One of the things we all are going to need to look out for is to make sure that if we ourselves or someone who we love or is on our team, if they're struggling, we need to make sure that we have that relationship with them where we're going to be able to feel comfortable asking them more information and getting an idea if we need to be helping them to get the extra level of support that might be needed. You know, we are in a time now where our population's more vulnerable. And although many of us are going to get through this challenge, even experiencing some post-traumatic growth in a way, becoming more resilient, more thankful, but some of us are also going to be experiencing more symptoms of depression and anxiety, and we want to make sure that we're able to identify and support those people, because the worst-case scenario would be that something like this leads a person to experience more depression, and that depression causes them to start having thoughts of not wanting to be alive or wanting to kill themselves. And we want to make sure that our community is ready to notice and anticipate and support those people who might be experiencing some very severe symptoms of anxiety and depression that could be causing them to want to hurt themselves in some way.
Very important for you to include in that. And going back to being watchful, you know, of the people that are in our lives, asking them the real questions, not the casual how are you, but how are you really feeling, and trying to make a safe place for them to express that. If we are noticing trouble within ourselves, we're having a hard time with our own depression deepening during this time, our own anxieties deepening, or we see that a loved one's anxieties or depression seems to be worsening as we are turning to healthcare. I understand that there are some therapists and counselors who will provide telehealth appointments. What's your recommendation for making sure, because we're trying to do everything at home, but when it comes to needing additional support, there are some things an individual really needs help with, and that might be a mental health challenge like severe depression or severe anxiety.
You're right, Rebecca, and thanks for giving me this opportunity. If there are a couple things I want to make sure that your listeners appreciate is, number one, there is no harm in asking someone about are you having thoughts of wanting to hurt yourself. There is absolutely no evidence that supports that us talking to someone about suicide increases their risk. Actually, it's the exact opposite. It's very protective. The other thing that's very important for our listeners to know is that our primary care clinics and our mental health clinics are fully staffed and able to do video visits with their patients and their clients from their home, using a variety of platforms, whether it's FaceTime or Google Duo. There are several platforms that are available at Intermountain and the University of Utah, and our state and our county mental health systems have increased our staffing and capabilities so that we are prepared for this increased need should anyone need support.
And so our frontline call would be to a primary care physician or a clinic to let them know that we need to book this appointment?
Yes. You know, as we all appreciate, we have a better connection with our primary care doctor oftentimes than any other medical profession in our lives. But for those people who have an established relationship with a therapist or a psychiatrist, they are all able to continue to engage with them and work with them, and it doesn't require them coming into their clinic. We can have those visits through video capabilities.
It's fantastic to learn that. And Dr. Mickelson, thank you so much for spending your life's work on helping all of us become more mentally healthy, and especially in this difficult time. So, yes, reach out to counselors, reach out to therapists, reach out to your primary care physician. Don't stand alone in that depression and in that severe anxiety. Dr. Mickelson, thank you so much for joining us on this week's edition of Utah Weekly Forum.
It was my pleasure, Rebecca.